On podcast 1757, Tesla's Model 3 Project Highland, a new Ford EV crossover for Europe, and a Megapack Pika plant. Trying a new thing this week, so you know when to expect a show. We go live at 5 p.m. UK, that's midday Eastern. Patreon supporters get the episodes as soon as they're ready, though, and ad-free. And you can be like them by clicking a link on the show notes or go to patreon.com/EVNewsDaily. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you're listening in the world. EV News Daily is your trusted source of EV information for Sunday, 26th of February. I'm Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story so you don't have to. Ford is extending its F-150 Lightning production pause for one more week and holding shipments for the same period of time as well. Ford had identified an issue with battery cells provided by their supplier, that's SK by the way, and had suspended production of the F-150 Lightning until 3rd of March. Ford has agreed with SK's recommended changes and SK started building battery cells again at their Georgia plant. Ford's full statement is that it'll take time for SK to ensure they are back to building what they say is high-quality cells to deliver them to the Lightning production line. Ford actually didn't issue a stop sale of the F-150 Lightning, but did issue a temporary halt on production and a stop shipments until it can confirm the vehicles were unaffected by this cell issue. Staying with Ford, and they should reveal their long-awaited, American-flavoured Ford electric crossover on the 21st of March. Now, Ford's European passenger car boss, Martin Sander, posted on his personal LinkedIn profile confirming the date, 21st of March, suggesting the car could be called the Explorer. Well, the UK magazine Autocar reported that Ford plans to revive historic names for their new EVs, but no details were given in this case. In a brief video, the European design chief Amco Linnartz revealed some two-tone alloys and hinted at a rugged urban character for this European crossover SUV from Ford. I think I'm pretty sure this is the one based on VW's MEB platform, which of course Ford said there'll be two cars coming on and then that's it. They will do their own European platform. Tesla in China is allocating resources to the domestic market for the rest of this quarter, but drone flyovers at Shanghai, at the port actually, have revealed a big number of Teslas waiting for shipment abroad, and from the looks of it, many of these look to me like right-hand drive versions. Yay for the UK, and good for Australia and other right-hand drive markets. And actually, if they're going to close down Shanghai for upgrades, these right-hand drive versions could be the last batch of the pre-upgrade right-hand drive Model 3 that Shanghai is exporting. And the upgrades are expected to bring revisions to the exterior and powertrain, infotainment and more. The upgraded Model 3s, the design will be changed as well to make things more cost-effective for Tesla. That's ominous for just about all of their competitors. Well, Tesla in China at Giga Shanghai is pausing production of the Shanghai facility. We think until the end of the month, possibly longer, to put some upgrades in place. Now, there might not be all the upgrades, but I think they are related to Project Highland. Project Highland is the name given to the new Model 3. That includes revamped infotainment. Not sure what that would be. Maybe a different size screen in the Model 3. Also, some powertrain performance improvements. Heck, how does the Model 3 get any better? Wow. And a simplified manufacturing process. Speculation also says that the upgrades may be a step forward to a full Project Highland rollout, but I don't expect that to be till Q3. So don't expect to order a car now and then get the brand new Model 3. Heck, these are still just rumours. Of course, at Investor Day, Tesla will tell us more. We would think that that's when Elon Musk will spill the beans on a car that is, what, 5-6 years old now, and I still think the Model 3 looks good, but, you know, you do see a lot of them, depending on where you live in the world, and they're a bit like a Camry these days. Model 3 can be a little bit common, not so special anymore. I think the car is special. There's lots of people have them. So actually, if there's a refresh version, a new one, something that makes people get excited again about the Model 3, like the Model Y did, then that's got to be a good thing. I'm really looking forward to hearing those details. Moving on, in Canada, Measurement Canada, the organisation, has approved per kilowatt hour billing for DC fast charging, allowing EV owners to be billed for actually what they consume rather than the time they are plugged in. The update will be easy for companies like Tesla to implement as they bill owners through their existing infrastructure, software, in-car display and the app. The change will expected to take place shortly in Canada. Tesla, of course, will have that one rolled out very quickly. And that is only fair, to be billed what you use rather than the time you're plugged in. In Europe, Audi had a bad day when the European Union Intellectual Property Office, the IPO, ruled that NIO's cars are not a threat. NIO make the ES8 and the ES6, and their trademarks, according to the IPO, do not create confusion with Audi's S8 and S6. Partly because the vehicles are so different in style and size. However, a German court had previously supported Audi back in January. NIO appealed the ruling, and it hasn't even started selling the ES6 or the ES8 in Germany. NIO had changed the name of its ES7 to EL7 in Europe, just in case, and they wanted to avoid any future conflicts there and legal battles. But the IPO coming down on the side of NIO with that one. A new Mercedes EQB has been spotted. We think that there's going to be a midlife refresh for the Merc EQB. Hasn't it been on the market 5 minutes? Okay, maybe 2 or 3 years, but still. Tweaked styling and updated infotainment is likely. Now, its sister car, because it's not built on a pure EV platform, its combustion equivalent is called the GLB. That does have some updating to do. That is an older vehicle. So if you're doing the GLB, you might as well do the electric version of it as well. Now, the electric version already has the revised front grille, already has the LED lights, so it has the new rear end. So there's less to do, I think, with the EQB, but still, I think some new dual touchscreens to bring the interior in line with what a new Mercedes looks like, and also, you would think, a pricing tweak, maybe. The reveal isn't expected anytime soon, because they're still testing cars with the camouflage on, but we think sometime towards the end of this year, maybe for a 2024 model year for the new Mercedes-Benz EQB. Now, a car that is coming mid-decade, 2025, is when you'll be able to take delivery of the Alfa Romeo all-electric car. It's called the Giulia Quadrifoglio. Anyway, my Italian's pretty bad. And it will be fully electric. It's going to be a super saloon, and it'll have a maximum power of 1,000 horsepower. This thing is going to be an absolute monster. It will use the large platform from Stellantis, called the STLA Large Platform. They say a range of 500 miles. The design of the car will be distinct from other cars on that platform. They want to provide the, what they're dubbing Electro-Leggera. So, having its own characteristics for handling, agility, ultra-glam, that kind of thing. There is actually an even more glam coupe coming from Alfa as soon as they've got their super saloon on the market. So Alfa got some really big plans for electrification. The coupe will have a choice of powertrains, but pure electric is definitely one of them. And if they do launch that with combustion, and you think they probably would do, it would likely be the last new model that Alfa launch with combustion engines. That's what we're getting into that territory now. We're going to start to say this more and more about them and other car makers as well, about their competitors. Hang on a minute. This is the last car they're going to launch with an engine. Like, this is it. This is the end game. This is serious. I don't think people realize. I mean, you do because you listen to this podcast. You stay updated, maybe even daily, on what's happening in the world of electric vehicles. And we talk about things that are 2025, 27, 28, because that's the time frame car makers are working to. And actually, they worked decades of time frames. But I think there are still people out there who are going to be surprised when they turn around and go like, oh, hang on a minute, electric cars are here. You and I won't be. We know it's coming, and it's going to be darn exciting. Now, let's talk about Florida, and I think some education might be needed here, respectfully. Florida Senator Jonathan Martin raised concerns that EVs, specifically EVs, will become roadblocks when they run out of power on highways crowded with fleeing residents during an evacuation of a hurricane. The Florida Department of Transportation is set to move forward this year with distributing federal money to add more charging stations near evacuation routes. The DOT's preference is to find ways to help EV owners, such as deploying portable chargers during evacuations. We've seen what Tesla do with their huge, huge batteries and supercharger stations pre-built, pre-packaged, pre-made, like a microwave meal, on the back of a lorry, and it just turns up and lowers it to the ground, and that's it. That's a supercharger station with battery backup there. The number of EVs registered in Florida is up 87% year on year. Only 1% of vehicles in the state, by the way. So it's not as if they're taking over Florida. Now, I think here, this Senator Jonathan Martin is perhaps speaking from a place of maybe not enough education, because you and I know that EVs can run out of electricity, but guess what? So can petrol cars. And actually, in an emergency situation, in a hurricane with a loss of power statewide, like a state-level loss of, or even a regional-level power issues, You know what you can't pump when there's no power? Yeah, petrol. You know one of those first places to go down? Yeah, petrol stations. And actually, if you have solar panels on your roof, Florida's a sunny state, and if you have some battery backup, and actually if you have an off-grid system or an off-grid capable system. Now, I haven't. My SolarEdge system in the UK, unlike the US, doesn't have an off-grid capability. That's coming in 2023, and if I can afford it, I'll absolutely add it just for belt and braces. I don't need it. Our power's so reliable here, by the way. I haven't had a power cut in years. I've not come home to see the LED lights on the oven flashing, the dead giveaway there's been a power cut. I just don't get them. But you need that bit, because if you're generating power, it can go back to the grid and it can harm people working on the grid, getting the power re-established. And so you need, like a Tesla Powerwall, the proper cutoff system, which islands your system. That's what it's called. And so that's coming for SolarEdge this year. Maybe I'll add it. It depends on the money. But if you've got that, you can be self-sufficient. And so actually, I'd say the opposite to this Floridian senator, that EVs in an emergency are more resilient than relying on petrol stations and gas pumps, which might not be working or might have water in the fuel tanks or something. So in an emergency, EVs can be better. But you don't know this person's agenda. They could genuinely be trying to help to stimulate the conversation. It's a good conversation to have, and it's a good way to educate people that, you know what, actually EVs, yeah, they can be a better thing in these kind of situations. Right, coming up on the podcast soon, we'll talk about solar carports. And unfortunately, one solar car reaches the end of the road. By the way, if you want to get this podcast ad-free, you can sign up to be a Patreon supporter. Thank you to everyone who does, and you can do that really easily by clicking the link on the show notes. You get the podcast first and ad-free, and you can be like those other Patreon supporters for $5, $10 a month. Many people pay more and support this podcast that way. Back in a sec. Okay, let's talk about US developers doing a solar carport in California. A 1.5 megawatt project in California at the Wilderness Lakes Campground. 2.4 million kilowatt hours of energy are expected to be made from this thing every year. That's over half of what the campground uses. That must be a big old campground then. California Senator Josh Becker introduced SB 49, a bill to provide tax incentives for the construction of solar carports. And estimates suggest that these carports could meet a third of California's total EV demand. And I completely agree. If you're building anything, a carport, a car park to start with in a sunny state, if you're building anywhere that you're going to park cars, and, you know, let's face it, America has more car parks than anywhere else on the planet. If you're building a car park, stick a solar carport above it, please. If you're building a building, stick some solar panels on the top, please. In France, they've just passed a law making solar carports mandatory for parking lots greater than 1,500 square meters. There's two new build houses at the end of my road. It was two old bungalows bought by a developer, knocked down. Two beautiful new houses they've built, like New England style. Really gorgeous houses. And they, I think, I'm not sure of the exact building regulations in the UK right now. I think they have to put some solar on the roof, but each house has like two panels. They've got massive roofs. Why has that not, and they're surface mounted ones as well, not even in roof solutions. If you're building a new build and you've got to put a roof on the thing anyway, you haven't got to buy the roof tiles. You haven't got to get a roofer to spend all that time fitting tile by tile by tile. Just put in big panels, an in-roof solution. It actually works out almost the same price. And it's really wound me up. I've seen these buildings going up. I've been thinking, hey, when they get to the roof, there better be some damn solar on the top of that thing. Two panels. Big houses, big roofs, two panels. What? Come on, developers! Anyway, I'm getting distracted. Let's talk about a project that sadly will go no further. I haven't talked about it much on this show. I've been getting sent press releases. Listeners have been saying, hey, you don't mention the Sono sign anymore. Yeah, look, 4 years ago, I had to report on so many things on this podcast that were coming, because we just didn't have enough to talk about. And the Sono sign, more recently, has been one of those stories that I just never report on because we've got other stuff that's real. Unfortunately, they've now terminated their car program, said they'll focus on solar solutions. It's a real shame because that's been around for, well, it seems like 10 years. They have a load of interest. They made 18 validation vehicles. They have 45,000 reservations, 12,000 pre-orders. 9,500 partially paid orders as well, but the company hit financial difficulties and they just couldn't make their solar car work. Arush, I like the Sono sign. It's that one that had the plants growing in the dashboard. It was interesting, but ultimately, that's tough to make work. Next, the final headline story of today. One of the US's first solar peaker plants just broke ground. The Vikings Energy Farm, one of the first solar peaker plants in the US, broke ground in Holtville, California. It's going to be powered by the First Solar Thin Film PV panels and a Tesla Megapack. It can store over 3 megawatt hours of energy, enough to power 3,600 homes for an hour. It's a unique configuration of solar panels and energy storage, allowing it to shift daytime solar production in a very sunny state to the late afternoon and evening hours. That's exactly what I do here on a micro scale. Once it's online, the project will provide renewable energy to San Diego Community Power and help reduce the need for fossil fuel-fired peaker plants. And here in the UK, over the last few weeks, there's been some trials going on where I'm with Octopus Energy, but my solar company, who I bought the panel, the inverter and stuff from, SolarEdge and the battery, actually are doing the same thing as well. So I could have opted into SolarEdge's or Octopus's, and the SolarEdge one actually more generous because they are creating, like Tesla do, their own version of uniting all of the local batteries around the UK. So I might opt out of the Octopus one for the next one and opt into the SolarEdge one and put my battery into the pool. And again, using that solar power during the day, it's just getting a bit more sunny now, we're almost into March, the sun's a bit higher in the sky, and then using that between 4 and 7 in the afternoon when the grid gets busy, and often we have to fire up some dirtier peaker plants to supply the power. Couple of articles to leave you with. First of all, a big EV battery plant is cropping up pretty much in every on every street corner, it seems. And Panasonic are saying, hey, this isn't going to be easy. With the US's Inflation Reduction Act, it means that incentives are available for the cars built on US soil and for batteries made and assembled on US soil. And Panasonic, of course, partners of Tesla with Giga, the original Gigafactory in Nevada at Sparks, has warned newcomers coming to America to say, actually, it's not easy and it's going to take you a really long time to become profitable. Panasonic started building the first big battery plant back in, 2015? It seems like about then. And it has struggled to both expand. You know, Tesla never fulfilled on their promise of the full size that was going to be covered in solar panels. They've just started doing that. And also to reach profitability. It's not easy. And Panasonic are saying, hey, welcome, but good luck to the newcomers. Also, a story from NPR this weekend. I will let you leave a link in the show notes if you want to read about hybrid cars. They're taking a look at cars like the Toyota Prius, a popular choice among many. Environmentalists point out that hybrid cars are an obstruction in the fight against zero-emission vehicles. And whilst some people are buying hybrids thinking they're buying a green vehicle, there is a debate, particularly amongst the car makers, EV advocates and government regulators, as to whether a hybrid car helps or hinders the move towards a greener future. Yeah, like, you know my point on this. You can, if you want to lock the CEO of Toyota in a garage for 24 hours with one of his green hybrids and see if he comes out alive, you're more than welcome. Like, anything that spews carcinogens and pollutants that kill people and give them asthma, that's not a green car. I'm not saying that plug-in hybrids and other hybrids as well, you can argue that they have some benefits if you're driving around a plug-in hybrid and you do plug in. Most people don't, but you do plug in, you do your 20, 30 miles a day electric, that's brilliant. And hybrids are the same. Like, they do reduce MPG, but ultimately they're just disgusting, dirty petrol cars. And so, you know, my thoughts on that, but good NPR article on that. And also, I'll leave you with an article from Business Insider that I found over the weekend. I thought it was interesting. It's a debate about the benefits or not of leasing an EV. You know, one of the new sponsors of this podcast is LeasePlan Electric Moments, all about educating EV owners. You know, personally, we've always bought our cars as well. We've used Onto a subscription. We tried that. It didn't quite work, you know, work for us, but everyone's different. It works for a lot of people. Leasing works for a lot of people. We tend to like to save up and buy stuff, but that often means that you miss out because you're still driving some old bangers while you're saving up, and those cars could be old polluting vehicles, and you argue, well, is it better to get that off the road? Also, there's incentives available. There's business tax reasons why leasing can be good as well. You can write that off. And so leasing an EV may be attractive for many people. We've never done it. we tend to be really conservative with our money anyway, small c, but still, you know, we're just really careful with, you know, with what we spend and all that kind of stuff. And you know, many people don't want to wait, don't want to save up 2 or 3 years to buy something like a big purchase. And so leasing eliminates that worry of things like depreciation. There are tax credit opportunities for leasing. Automakers are incentivized as well. They can offer some really good lease deals. The Model 3 lease deals around at the minute are stellar. And so there's good arguments for many different business models. And I'll pop a link to that Business Insider article in the show notes if you'd like a bit of weekend reading. And that's your podcast for today. Thanks to our premium partners, Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of the Village, Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley's EV Review Island YouTube channel, Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK, Octopus Electric Universe, grab yourself the app or the card. They make global public charging simple with one app and one map. Millbrook Cottages down in Devon. You can book your 5-star luxury self-catering cottage and charge your EV. I was down there seeing Bob and the gang a couple of weeks ago, and they're putting in 2 new EV chargers. Brilliant. Just tap your card on that, charge up. It's look like such a good solution. And Lease Plan Electric Moments with all the tools and guidance that EV drivers need. Thanks to the partners of the show, David and Lisa Allen, Yucca Kukkonen from shift2electric.com with the number 2, Rajiv Narayan, Michael Lumley, and get your battery reports for EVs at recurrentauto.com. And as it's a Sunday, I give a little shout to all our exec producers, everyone who's $10 and above per month. Adrian Bond, Alan Shedd, Alex Banahini, Alexander Frank, Anders Hove, Andrea Jefferson, Andrew Loomer, Andy Duncaro and Lillian Cass, Asir Khalid, Bjud Fuchstack, Bill Calhoun, Blaine McKinney, Blunderbuss Jones, Brian O'Leary, Brian Thompson, Bruce Bohannon, Chad Lane, Charles Hall, Christopher Barth, Colin Hennessy and Camzy V and Craig Rogers. David Dysart, David Finch, David Partington, David Prescott, DCEV, Ed Cortine, Eddie Ragassa, Eric Hansen and Eru Cuny Nyombi. Frederick Rovick, Gene Rubin, George Tortorolo, Heinrich Leisner, Helmut Selke, Ian Waddy Watkins, Ian Griffiths, Ian Sear, Jack Oakley, Jay Cocoon, James Penfold, James Storr, and Ian from emobilitynorway.com. Jim Morris, John Schroeder, John Vandervoort, John, who is Beardy McBeardface, purveyor of wonderful waistcoats and Ken TVs, John Manchek, Juan Gonzalez, Kester Sandbach, Kevin Merson, Lawrence D. Allen, Lee Brown, Luke Cully, Marcel Ward, Nathan Gore Brown, and Nathan King, Nathaniel Friedman, Neely Roberts from Sussex EVs, Ohan Aston, Paul Stevenson, Pete Glass, Pete Gordon, Peter and D. Roberts, Peter Reiner, Phil Mouchet, Philip Forrester, Philip Troutman, Raymond Rowledge, Realtor's Choice Photography, Rob from the RS Thinks EV YouTube channel on EV channel on YouTube, Robert Gray, Sakey Payne, Stephen Penn, Steve John, The Plug Seekers EV YouTube channel, Thomas JTS, Timothy Phillips, and Tyler Voss. Have a good one. See you tomorrow for a brand new week. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.